Sometimes I wish my skin was a costume that I could just unzip and strip. But who I am is who I'm meant to be, and it's who you are in life.
Hi, this is Cammy. Welcome to our program today. This is going to be a program that hopefully will be shared on a variety of podcast forums, so I'm not going to necessarily say this is Feminist Mormon Housewives, even though we're going to post it there first. We're hoping to get this out to the audiences of many different podcast forums and to audiences everywhere. I am here with my sister Meg. Hi, Meg.
Hi, Cammy.
Meg's been on a podcast with me before on her grassroots movement called Mama Dragons, where they help LGBT advocacy with teens and helping to prevent suicide and homelessness with the LGBT teen community. Is that right, Meg?
Yeah, actually, we just encourage people to get involved in their local communities. So if you feel more driven to do work within the transgender community, then that's great. I focus on teenage homelessness and suicide specifically as something I feel called to do. But Mama Dragons is just a call to action. If you have an activist heart, or if you have it in you to be an activist, do that where you feel most passionate about in the LGBT community. There's certainly enough things to do for everyone. There's enough to go around. So.
And I think that's a really good point. Hone in on what you feel the most passionate about, because otherwise you'll get exhausted trying to do everything. Mm-hmm. Meg has a son that came out last year. He's how old? 14?
He's 15 now. What? He came out when he was 13. It was a year and a half ago.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
He's like super, super grown up. Okay.
Yeah, time is flying.
Oh, I just remember John. He was so little. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, anywho, when he came out, as a lot of parents, when they feel passionate about something that happens in their family, a lot of times they'll get involved or create some movements that help to advocate for a specific cause. And that's what Meg and her husband has done. And so proud of them. We can put some links to their organizations and the organizations that they are connected with. So why are we doing this podcast? Okay. Today is November 17th. And a week ago, I get this awful message from Meg. It was a private message to her sisters. So we really support each other. And she was just overwhelmed with grief because an LDS teen boy had just committed suicide. And Meg just has the biggest heart, the biggest heart. So we're doing everything we can to pump her up, to tell her we love her. We did Skype with my sister in Abu Dhabi and ended up laughing so hard I almost peed my pants.
Nothing like sister therapy.
Nothing like that. And then Meg got pulled out to a movie with a friend and things were great. And then the next day she found another teen, LGBT teen girl, this time had done the same thing, committed suicide. So it was, by that point, I'm like, my sister is such a big heart and this is killing her and I need to do something. I got my mama dragon out, started breathing some fire, and I just voiced how upsetting that is and how awful that was, that within 48 hours, two teenage kids killed themselves over their sexual orientation. So as I voiced it on a certain forum, I just threw out, you know, we should all dress in black one Sunday and wear a gay pride ribbon in the name of somebody who's passed away because they killed themselves over this issue. Mm-hmm. And I'm not kidding. I had swarms of people going, yes, yes, do it, do it, do it. I so want to get involved. And I thought about it. I'm like, that really could happen. It's simple. Anybody could do it. Mm-hmm. So we created an admin for this idea, got some ideas together. Michael Ferguson came up with an idea of a candle vigil. And so we formulated this. And I'll tell you a little bit about I'll tell you real quick what we're doing, and then we'll go into the reasons why we need to bring this to everyone's attention, especially in the LDS community. So we have formed an event called the LDS LGBT Suicide and Homelessness Awareness Day. What we're doing is we're hoping to bring awareness once a year on the first Sunday of every year. So this year it'll be December 7th. And what we can do is active and less active members of the LDS Church can go to church on that Sunday wearing all black, a gay pride ribbon, and the name tag of somebody in the LDS community who has passed away because of this situation. We prefer just for first names for privacy's sake. And we'll get more into where you can find that information if you don't know somebody firsthand who has experienced that. Then later that evening, as most of us here know, the first Sunday of every December, every year, the First Presidency does a Christmas devotional. And so it airs 6 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. And those who want to participate, both active, non-active members of the church, and anyone who doesn't go to church can participate in this as well. What we'll do is dress in the same attire, wearing all black, the gay pride ribbon. If you choose, you can wear the name of somebody who has passed away due to this issue. And we'll hold a candlelight vigil at either your local stake center during the devotional program, or if you live in Salt Lake City or close by Salt Lake City, there will be a mass of people meeting there at Temple Square to hold the candlelight vigil there as well. The reason why I wanted to do something like this is because I think it's important to just bring to awareness on a day that we're celebrating the day remembering the month where the Savior was born, or at least what we celebrate, which is Christmas, when he was born. What better way to take the moment to go, we're losing kids, literally, that we're losing their lives, and we can't take another kid's life anymore with our silence. And so with all the Christ-like love we have, we reverently, lovingly come into this situation saying we need to be more aware, we need to wake up, and we need to extend beyond what we're doing. So Meg, tell us a little bit about why this is so important. A lot of people may be like, I don't know anybody who's committed suicide. This is not a big deal. I never hear about this. So talk to us a little bit about this, because I think you and some of the people that are involved in this have a lot more information than the mass media, especially the mass media in the LDS community, has.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Well, first of all, let me say I'm really glad I'm surrounded with nice and thoughtful and reasonable people, because I was ready to march right down to a temple and chain myself to it until they addressed this in some way, or the church leaders or somebody, the media. I feel like it's such an issue that's swept under the rug. And it's this big, huge secret. It's this big, dark secret that nobody talks about. I think there's a lot of shame surrounding suicide for those who have died by suicide. Obviously, they felt so much guilt and shame before their death. And then the family that's left behind, I think there's some shame and guilt about that as well. Because what may have they contributed to? How did they contribute to this, if anything? Or, you know, there's a lot of stigma behind suicide. And I think that this is a conversation that needs to start happening. So I'm thrilled to be doing this with you, Cammie. It is something that is happening. It's not something we can just say, well, I don't know anybody, so it must not be a big deal. That's just working within your own small, tight world. This is happening. It is prevalent. It's actually at epidemic levels in Utah. So what I have here is a statistic given to me, some statistics given to me by Marion Edmonds, who runs outreach in Utah. And she provides shelter, clothing, and food for homeless teenagers in Utah. You heard that right. Homeless teenagers.
There is a lot of.
That exists. We have about 5,000 homeless teenagers here in Arizona, and it's an epidemic. It's really quite sad. How they were displaced, if they were kicked out, or if they didn't feel safe at home anymore and they felt they had to leave and the streets would be better. The circumstances are different for each one. But yes, some kids are kicked out within 20 minutes of coming out of the closet to their parents. So they leave with the clothes on their back and whatever they can stuff in their backpack. And typical LGBT teens that do find themselves homeless have 48 hours to find a safe place. And this is just statistic. This is just what it is. If they do not find that safe place within 48 hours, they are resorting to extreme measures of survival, whether it be drugs to stay awake so they're not assaulted in the parks, or selling their bodies for prostitution, prostituting their bodies for money just to survive. Or just a place to sleep. Yeah. Exactly. LDS. LGBT teens have less time.
Time than 48 hours,
yeah,
is what you're saying?
They get nowhere near that 48-hour mark.
How come?
I can't say. I don't know if there's – it would only be speculation for me to say why. I just know that's what it is.
Okay.
I can obviously speculate that they are ashamed and they don't feel worthy to go – you know, usually when you're Mormon, and especially in Utah, you are surrounded by Mormons. All of your friends are Mormons. All of your neighbors are Mormon. Your church leaders, it's what you know. It's what it is. I'm trying to think when I was living in Utah as a teenager, I would live there for my junior and senior year. I'm trying to think if I knew somebody that was not LDS.
True.
And I didn't.
Right.
Yeah. So you literally don't have a place to go.
Yeah.
So very quickly, you're resorting to those extreme measures of survival. And these are good kids. These are good kids. And you do what you have to do to survive. According to Marian Edmonds Allen, who I said her name wrong earlier, who runs the outreach. I'll just read it real quick. She says, okay, what she's seen too many times is that the Mormon youth get nowhere near the 48 hours of safety. But there is a new law in Utah that means that the youth don't have to be reported if they somehow find a youth facility. The problem with this is that in Utah, and the laws have just recently changed, is that you can house a youth, okay? But we don't have any. Because the laws have just changed, you'll start seeing more youth centers pop up. But right now, there just aren't any in Utah. So this is still a huge problem. A lot of licensing requirements or whatever.
Can you explain youth being reported? What do you mean by that?
You have to report that you're housing a youth. You can't house them. You would have to turn them away.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. What Marian does, I believe, is she had been providing tents and food and some clothing, anything that we can get for these kids, but she couldn't house them in a structure. According to some Utah laws, this is a whole other podcast,
okay,
a whole other kind of situation I won't get into detail about, but the laws have just recently changed, so that's good news.
Okay.
But the predators in Utah, they troll the streets watching for a scared youth with a full backpack. So, Marian would say she'd usually see a homeless LDS youth one time and then they disappear. Sex trafficking is huge, and youth are too often transported and sold outright or sold in Utah and Western states. An average of 20 times a day that a single child is sold to different men. 62% of the youth experiencing homelessness that she works with have attempted suicide. 62% that she's worked with attempted suicide, most more than once. So there's a place called Suicide Rock near a homeless youth camp above Salt Lake. These youth don't get a second chance. So, LGBT youth suicide and homelessness are definitely linked. And that's why we're connecting the two together for this day of remembrance.
Right.
Correct?
Yes. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So those are just some of the statistics I'd like to throw out there, some of the conversations we need to start having. at these Day of Remembrances all over the country. We're going to be handing out booklets, and I'll let you talk more about that.
Well, and I think it's important, Meg, for us to also acknowledge that it's this is also a problem with other Orthodox religions as well. The LDS situation with this type of scenario is very real. It's a lot more real than the LDS community is willing to look at right now. Mm-hmm. And it's killing our children not to look at it. Mm-hmm. And I've also noticed working with this and looking into it, it's a common thread with Orthodox religion that you're having kids thrown out of the house. And I don't know if you've seen the one on YouTube where the kid actually was able to film what happened when he came out and his parents threw him out, got violent, were hitting him. It was awful. Mm-hmm. So this is just one step in our community that we can take. I think if we know people from other Orthodox religions, we can bring it to their awareness because it does happen. And I'd like to go back for just a second on what you said about shame. Mm-hmm. I have for a long time when I was a true believing member of the church, I never agreed with Prop 8. I always felt like it was constitutionally incorrect. And I just kept my mouth quiet because I figured the prophets knew best. And I started seeing a lot of problems happening with the LDS LGBT community as I was going back to school, getting my bachelor's. And I saw the ostracizing, the suicide attempts. It was really bad not having a place to live. And I kept thinking, okay, well, the leaders will do something because it's a problem. The leaders will say something when we need to act. And when my friend finally shot himself, I was done. I took off the reins in my mouth and I just said, I'm done. This mm-hmm. has to be spoken about now. And if it's not me, then who? Mm-hmm. And so I think going back to shame, what I felt during those years when I kept my mouth shut, I felt super ashamed that our leaders hadn't said anything. Because I kept waiting. I kept waiting. And I just realized that scripture that we are active agents that have to do something. If somebody hadn't done something in the very beginning of the church, we wouldn't have primary. We wouldn't have relief society. We wouldn't have, you know, church libraries set up in all the church buildings. We wouldn't have so many things. And we have to be active agents. When we see a cause, we see something good, we do it. Because mm-hmm. there is a sin of omission, and it's allowing evil to take place. So I think sometimes people don't want to hear this because mm-hmm. they're ashamed that their leaders aren't saying something. So let's turn that around and say, you know, how much do they actually see when they're in their bubble, having to go from ward to stake and always being surrounded, like Meg, you said you were in Provo, with mm-hmm. everybody who's active and gives them statistics on all this other stuff. And they're not in the trenches like we are. So mm-hmm. it's our responsibility.
Yeah. I want to just make that very clear just because you don't know of a situation in your particular circle, it cannot be dismissed. You just have to believe that it is happening and that we see it. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, a lot of people like to dismiss circumstances. Well, I don't, you know, and again, we all have our own life experiences and our own. So the point is it is happening. It does need to be talked about. It cannot be ignored any longer. We cannot keep losing all of these beautiful children. We just can't. This cannot happen anymore. Yeah. So a Day of Remembrance is a small thing we can do, but it could grow and it could get bigger every year, and we could become, and we could just put more and more and more of a microscope on this.
Yeah. I think we'll just, and like I have in the event, we're just going to keep doing this every year until our mm-hmm. goal is met. No more uh-huh. homelessness for sexual orientation issues for teens, and mm-hmm. no more suicide because of it. None.
That'd cannot agree day. More.
We'll do. I know.
Yes, exactly. I cannot agree more. So yes, it's a great cause. Sorry.
Do you want me to read Caitlin? What is her name again, Meg?
Caitlin Ryan. Mm-hmm. She's the one who wrote with Bob Reese, and she This is her life's work. She's been doing this for over 30 years. I can't, probably over 40.
Yeah, she has a PhD. It looks like she's the director of the Family Acceptance Project in San Francisco. Okay.
Yes, she's the director of the Family Acceptance Project. She has her PhD, and this is her life's work. This is her...
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, so she sent me some information.
Mm-hmm.
She said that sometimes the challenge in reporting the statistics is that they come from different sources, and so there might be a fluctuation. So in her time in working with the Family Acceptance Project, she gave me some statistics to work with. She said that more than 25 years ago, advocates reported that 30% of all suicide deaths were LGB people, especially youth. So she says now it's not correct. I'm trying to look and see what she is saying now. Just one moment.
A lot of people want hard evidence with these numbers. It's really difficult to get hard numbers. Just going to put it out there. This is a disclosure. These are youth, and their privacy has to be protected above all else. And so these numbers aren't going, you're not going to find these in the city records.
Right.
Just so you know, these are on the ground, grassroots efforts, people who are faced with this every day. These are the numbers that they've collected from their personal experiences.
Right. But when mm-hmm. you're doing research, because it's a minor, they mm-hmm. can't disclose that information because it's private.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to find the U.S., you know, statistics on blah, blah, blah as being mm-hmm. accurate.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. Thank you, Meg, because it is grassroots, and I would much rather err on the side of caution and getting mm-hmm. these kids taken care of and, you know, making it extreme, even if it's just one, it's too many.
That's what I was saying. When people challenge me on these numbers, they're like, I think your numbers are falsified. I haven't found these in the city records, and they just want to challenge me. And I don't know if because they're trying to protect their own emotions. I don't know the reasons behind challenging me, but I do get challenged on this. And I always come back with, even if it's one, this is unacceptable.
Yep.
It's an unacceptable reality to live with, to deal with, and it has to change.
Yeah, and she said that there's around an estimate of 5,000 youth experiencing homelessness in Utah each year. I think you had mentioned mm-hmm. that, and that half of them identify as LGBT.
Mm-hmm.
Half of them are from LDS homes. So just look at that. 2,500 kids who have homes, who have food, shelter, who have a family that that turns them out. The youth uh-huh. travel up and down the Wasatch Front. They live in abandoned houses, camps, and live in trees and parks. They form families of 12 or so and care for each other.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I'm trying to see if there's any other information. 62% of outreach youth, I think you mentioned this, who are homeless have attempted suicide, almost all more than once.
Mm-hmm.
One youth has lost... So one of the youth that she reported said that they had lost 19 friends to suicide in mm-hmm. Utah.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that again. That makes me, it needs to be repeated. One youth reported to her that she had lost 19 friends to suicide in Utah.
Yeah.
So far, we've had amazing progress with Gay Mormon Stories, with some of the other things Wendy Montgomery's been involved in. What are the names of those?
Wendy is heavily involved with the Family Acceptance Project. That's where that's the organization that funded and did their documentary. So she is heavily involved with that. She travels the country, and they show the documentary. And so she's had great success with bringing some awareness of family acceptance, and kind of giving a great example of how parents should react to their gay teen coming out, giving an alternative, and just talking about it, just having the conversation. She does work with some higher ups in the church. She and I both have had meetings with one of the 12 apostles to kind of talk about this, and we just need to be having these conversations because right now, what somebody mentioned to me is that the reason why we've had such an influx in suicide and homelessness is because youth are seeing gay people in the media or on TV and how it's being accepted and normal. Like we have Glee, we have Modern Family, we have The New Normal. We have these shows that these teenagers are seeing and they feel safe to come out. Well, their parents didn't grow up in the world they're growing up in. So they are a lot less educated. They feel a lot less comfortable with it. It's not accepted by their friends and peers. And I feel like they're doing this in a way to show love for their child, kind of like tough love that they don't have the information that we have. Are you born this way? You know, so, in a way it's a very twisted way, but I feel in a way that this is them trying to save their child.
By kicking them out.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So we need to, this is why we need this education. We need to change the dialogue because a lot more teens are feeling so much more comfortable to come out. They don't expect to be thrown out of their homes. It's not how it's done on TV. So my opinion is that parents need to be educated, and hopefully in the next generation, we won't have as big a problem as we have now. But right now we do have a problem.
So I'd like to throw out a question that maybe people can think about who are not sure if this is how their child is, if somebody's like this, that they're just messed up and confused or Satan's confused them. just ask yourself this. Why would anybody choose to live a life with that kind of affliction, where they can't get married, where they can't have a normal family, where their parents might never speak to them again, where they're going to get beat up at school? Sometimes they're killed for it. So why would they do that if it wasn't something that they just are? And I think we have seen the failure of people trying to deny who they are sexually and their sexual orientation, and how much more healthy it's been for families to accept and love one another. I don't know. When someone mentioned that once to me, they said, why do you think anyone would want this? If they could choose, why wouldn't they choose the way everyone else is doing it?
Mm-hmm. And that's where I think a lot of turmoil comes inside the family, is because they're saying, why would you choose this? They think that Satan's maybe got a hold of their child. Again, I'm speculating on a lot of things. This is just stuff that I've heard from personal experiences and personal listening to people tell their stories. They literally have heard from their parents that Satan has got a hold of them and that they need to choose a different path. And again, this all goes back to education. We just need to educate ourselves. Yeah. We need to educate those around us. We need to talk about this. This is not a taboo subject. Somebody once said, well, sorry, I don't mean to offend you, but can I say that your son is gay? And I was like, why is that offensive? You know, like, yes, please talk to me. We can talk about this. He is gay. It's not an offensive thing. It's not something to be ashamed of or embarrassed of. And
right.
You know, people are even scared to say the word. I have family in my very close inner circle and my personal family that still have not even said the word to me.
Really?
So again, this all comes back to education, awareness.
Right.
We just need, and to, again, the kids that form these families in Utah, these like family units of teenagers run by teenagers living together as teenagers in groups, or up in the valley where they find these tents and they find places to go, places like Outreach and Safe and Sound. They call themselves the throwaway kids.
Mm.
So this is, it's just really sad. It's just really sad. And I'm edit this out.
It's okay.
It's just really, really awful. And we should all be outraged. I think for me, when I first started learning about this a couple years ago or a year and a half ago, I didn't want to believe that my Mormon people would do that. Mm-hmm. I would think, gosh, people have got to be from somewhere else. They've got to be, you know, I would look at all my friends at church and just think they would never kick their kid out. That just would never happen. But you can't, we have to stop that dialogue. We can't say that would never happen. It is happening. It is a problem. And we're going to do something about it. We're not going to be quiet anymore. Although we will be very respectful and I will do my best. I will do my best to be respectful.
I know.
Part of me just wants to be banging my head against a temple gate, you know, and understandably, I think that's an appropriate reaction. I think we should all be having that reaction of just mm-hmm. wanting to go and do something really extreme and loud. But, you know, of course, I understand that doesn't get anything done.
I think the important thing is to bring out the masses to change the wave of if you change the tide of consciousness, then the wave of change happens. And that's what we're trying to do with this, is to meet people wherever they're at in the way that they can hear it and help one child not be thrown out that would have been thrown out. Help one child find support with their parents in a loving, accepting way that would have, without this, felt there was no hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I'm glad we're doing this. This is something you can do. This is an action, or this is a plan. This is an action-oriented day. A lot of people always say, oh, this is so terrible. What can I do? What can I do? And I always say, get involved in your local communities. Find your local youth homeless shelters. They're everywhere. You just have to find them. And I can help people find them. Come to me. I mean, really, people always say, what can I do? What can I do? And I always give suggestions. There's so much we can do. But this is something that you can do as a group. You can do this with somebody, people in your ward, families, people in your local communities, people that you know personally. We encourage you to go to take part in this. Take pictures, post them on our group,
yes.
Post them on the event. Know that you're not alone out there as an LGBT ally. Come together in your local communities. So this is something that is a plan. It's something you can do for one day, and we can bring as much awareness, and hopefully this movement just builds and builds and builds.
Yeah, just be really aware when you get media coverage that this is not a protest. This is not a protest. This is a day of remembrance and a day mm-hmm. of prevention. Mm-hmm. And at Candle Vigils, it's a day of honoring those that they should be there at the Christmas devotional that mm-hmm. the First Presidency gives. They should be there with us. So we're wearing their names in Mormons Love Proxy. We're wearing their names in proxy. And we're mm-hmm. saying, no more, no more losing. Mm-hmm. We only want people to stay. Mm-hmm. So that is our event. You can look it up. It's on Facebook under mm-hmm. LDS LGBT Suicide and Homelessness Awareness Day. It's public. Share it with as many people as you can. We have on there places that you can find people in your area. Mm-hmm. So that maybe you can congregate to one specific state center in your area, so there's more in numbers. Mm-hmm. And we have people to contact if there's any media requests for information. Mm-hmm. And I think that's about it.
Can I just leave with one thought?
Absolutely.
So sometimes people do approach me and say they're having suicidal thoughts and they don't know what to do. And usually if it's an emergency type situation, I'll refer them to the Trevor Project. But before I do, this is something I say to everyone. But I understand how relieving suicide feels.
Yeah.
I understand that feels like comfort. And that it's going to take a lot of work to stay with me. I said, and I know this is selfish. I know I'm being selfish asking this of you, but I'm begging you to stay with me. And I'm begging you to do this hard thing. And I know that it would feel so much better to just let it all go, but just stay with me and help me make this world better for others. And I know that's selfish, and I'm sorry, but this selfish mom wants you to stay. So So that would be my message, is just please just stay with us. I don't want anyone to look at this and feel that this is that option out there. This is just a day of remembrance for those that have left. But for those that are thinking about this, the selfish poem just wants you to stay.
Yeah.
Even though I know it's hard. And it's a hard road. And I get it. Yeah. But that would be my, if anybody's listening.
Right, that's feeling that way.
And
we'll put a suicide prevention hotline link mm-hmm. on this as well for anyone. Mm-hmm. For myself, I have suicidal tendencies. I have depression and anxiety that I've had for a long time. And mm-hmm. so I take medication and I do really well. But there were two times in my teenage life that I tried to commit suicide, and somebody literally stopped me, happened to come by right when it was happening. And my life was really bad. And when I hit rock bottom as an adult a few times, Meg can tell you, I was done. I was done. And all I wanted was just to never wake up again. I honestly don't know how I got through that because I was by myself, but I did reach out to a couple people and just told them I loved them and I couldn't take anymore and I was going. And I know for some of you that don't get suicide, you might be thinking, oh, that's so selfish. Mm-hmm. That's okay. You can think that. Mm-hmm. But until you've been there, you don't get it. The oxygen does not circulate in your frontal lobe when you're in that state of depression. They can show that in a scientific lab that you cannot think reasonably when mm-hmm. you're in that state, period. Mm-hmm. And when someone's in that state, the last thing they need is any guilt or shame. Mm-hmm. That is going to spiral them to the point where you will not see them the next day. Mm-hmm. So stop the judgments of people who have suicidal tendencies because mm-hmm. you don't get it. And if you mm-hmm. did, you would be loving them. That's what they need. They need a reason to stay. They need a reason to look beyond this moment. And mm-hmm. I promise you, you have it within you. You have a divine source in yourself that can literally pick you up off that bathroom floor and walk you over, wash off your face, and put you to bed. You have it. Mm-hmm. Reach into it. It's so there. It's what got me into my bed that night, and I stayed here another day to take care of my daughter. Mm-hmm. We love you. We need you. We need your stories. And just think of so many people that will need your story of how they can get past their moments, because you mm-hmm. will find them. So we hope that people will take this opportunity to stand in solidarity with all the kiddos that can't be with us anymore because they just couldn't stay. Mm-hmm. And all the people that just felt so unloved, this is our moment to say, we're so sorry we didn't do this before, but we're doing it now. And we're doing it until it no longer happens again. Mm-hmm. And with all my heart, I say that with my love, and I hope to see you there. I hope to hear from you. We hope to see your stories, mm-hmm. and we hope that we can make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you, Cammie. No more second guessing. No, there's no more questioning.